Usually, it's against the law to use inside information for financial gain, but here's one example where it's being encouraged. What if you knew the genetic information inside a horse's cells to determine if he or she should be a sprinter, middle, or long-distance runner? Is there really such a thing as a speed gene? Or does that idea come from the same place as unicorns? We'll bring you the latest inside info, so to speak, on this edition of In the Gate.
They're in the gate!
They're in the gate.
In the gate.
They're in the gate.
It's a hit by big finish!
This is In the Gate, ESPN's Thoroughbred Racing Podcast. My name is Barry Abrams. You can follow me on Twitter at BAbramsVoice or on Facebook at Barry Abrams Voice. You can also get us on our YouTube channel by searching In the Gate Podcast. You can get us on SoundCloud as well, which services the iTunes Store and TuneIn.com. You can get us on that little pink podcatcher app on your phone that you didn't even know you had. And now you can subscribe to In the Gate in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. For the full In the Gate experience, subscribe now in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. It's fairly common knowledge nowadays that genes provide all the instructions for how to build and regulate living things, plant and animal. Your hair color, eye color, how tall you are, etc. All those things come from genes. But what about qualities like athletic ability? How much of athletic ability in animals, including humans, is due to what's been commonly called God-given talent, which you could call genetic? The horse racing community certainly backs this idea. That's why there are very high prices paid at thoroughbred auctions. But how much of success in humans, let's say, is due to one person being more dedicated and practicing longer and harder than the next person? So what about racehorses? Is there a gene or a series of genes that control athletic ability in horses? Is even the will to win, as we often say of horses, genetic in nature? It sounds a little bit like looking for the Holy Grail, the lost city of Atlantis, or Shangri-La, but evidence is starting to show that there might just be a speed gene. So we figured that with bloodlines all the rage as the Keeneland September sale is going on, it would be a timely topic to discuss. With us to dive into the topic is Dr. Emmeline Hill, senior author of a 2012 study that traced the origin of the so-called speed gene. Dr. Hill is a genomics scientist at University College in Dublin, Ireland, and also co-founder of a company called Equinome, which has developed the Equinome Speed Gene Test. And we're pleased to welcome for the first time here to In the Gate, Dr. Emmeline Hill. So your study points to a specific speed gene, the result of a genetic mutation in a single British mare 300 or so years ago. What does that gene do to separate speedy horses from non-speedy horses?
So we've found that the speed gene or variation in the speed gene, which means mutations or changes, can have an effect on a number of functional phenotypes or have a number of functional effects. First of all, we've shown in a number of studies, not only in our own, but researchers in Japan, have shown that it controls the development of the muscle during the early stages of training in the young thoroughbred. This is not alike, but not dissimilar from the effect that myostatin has in other species. The reason we first started looking at it, in fact, was because we knew that mutations in the myostatin gene in other species, in cattle, sheep, pigs, and so on, had very pronounced effects on the muscling. So, for instance, mutations in the myostatin gene are responsible for the double muscling that is seen in Belgian Blue cattle. So while it's not quite severe an effect in horses, the gene seems to have the same function in that it controls the development of muscle. So horses that are the CC type tend to develop more quickly when they are in the training environment. So there is a relationship between the environment and the gene. It seems to stimulate the change. So that's one effect. The other that was shown by a group in the University of Minnesota is that it seems to influence the laying down of the different muscle fiber types. Type 1 fibers and type 2 fibers are also known as slow or fast twitch fibers. Type 2 fibers are more aerobic, the endurance type fibers that support endurance exercise, and type 2 fibers or fast twitch fibers are those that are required for more sprint type or power exercise. And we think that this is the, you know, this is the case for genes contributing to all performance traits. It's not that genes are contributing to the racing performance overall per se, but that genes underpin all of the different adaptations, the different anatomical, metabolic, and physiological adaptations that are required to produce an elite racehorse.
One of Dr. Hill's partners in the Equinome project we mentioned earlier is noted Irish trainer Jim Bolger, who's won a number of important European races. Give us an example of how his attention to genetic testing has paid off for him.
Yeah, well, actually, there's a more recent example than that. Jim Bolger had the winner of the Group 1 National Stakes race here in Ireland, which is a highly prestigious race for two-year-olds.
And inside it, it's Beckford on the near side from Verbal Dexterity. Rostropovich back in third place as they race inside the last half furlong. Verbal Dexterity on the far side of Beckford. And it's Verbal Dexterity and Kevin Manning going to win the National Stakes and wins it decisively about four lengths or so.
That horse is Verbal Dexterity. He's now the highest rated two-year-old colt in Europe. And Jim has high hopes for him being champion two-year-old this season. He was bred on the basis of the Equinome results for his and his sire. Just so that you're aware, Jim has given me permission to talk openly about this horse. And, you know, we're very careful about not disclosing the results of horses without the agreement of our of the owner. The stallion vocalized as a CC, and the mare was a TT.
What does that mean?
So that means that, so first of all, if you start with the mare is a TT, and Jim's preference would be to have, to produce a higher proportion of either CC or CT horses, because that means that they have a greater opportunity as two-year-olds to prove themselves at an early stage, but also as CTs, they have the opportunity to race over the middle distances later on as three-year-olds.
So CC is for long muscle fibers and TT are short muscle fibers?
Sorry, no, we should go backtrack a little bit. The CC horses are best suited to short-distance sprint racing, CTs to middle distance, and TT to longer distance. So Jim decided a long time ago, back in 2009, that once he saw the data that we had produced, that it would be in his best interest to produce a greater proportion of CC and CT foals from his mare crop. So when he sees a brood mare that is a TT, he tries to avoid producing another TT foal from that horse. And the only way to do that, be sure of that, is to send a TT mare to a CC stallion. And that ensures that the only possible outcome of that breeding is that the foal would be a CT. So Jim chose Vocalized, one of his stallions, who's a CC for that mare, and produced this horse Verbal Dexterity, who we know is a CT. And I suppose that's a very recent and good example of how this information has been used to produce a champion racehorse.
Dr. Emmeline Hill is a genomic scientist at University College in Dublin, Ireland, and is nice enough to join us here on In the Gate. There's a song that came out around 7 or so years ago called Remember the Name, with lyrics that say, 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will. In other words, success is not just hereditary. It also takes more factors like dedication to training and heart. So, Dr. Hill, how much of those kinds of things does your study take into account from a genetic standpoint?
Well, interestingly, we have a scientific paper that is being reviewed at the moment where we performed a study where we looked at the genetics of horses that actually go on to have a racecourse career versus those horses that never have a racecourse start. And what we found is that a gene that is associated with the chance of having a racecourse start is actually a gene that's been shown in rodents to be involved in the feedback response to the will to exercise voluntarily. So voluntary exercise. Mice and rats can run on these little wheels, treadmills. And we found that this gene the same gene that's found in mice that's associated with voluntary exercise also seems to be appearing in horses for this trait. So I strongly believe that there are behavioral contributions to performance attributes in horses. That's probably one, and it's secondly something that we're looking at. We have a PhD student at the moment whose sole focus for the next 4 years is to delve into that very question.
That notwithstanding, what else have you learned about the so-called speed gene since that initial study came out years ago?
And at the time, we were rather surprised, and I think others were probably even more surprised than we were, that a single gene would have such a large and profound effect on a performance trait in the thoroughbred. Nobody was expecting that. Nobody was expecting that there would be a single gene that would have such a powerful effect. What we had expected is that there would be multiple genes all contributing in an additive fashion to the overall performance trait. But the speed gene is particular in that it can't determine whether an individual is likely to be an elite performer or not. But it does determine and define the distance for that individual. So what we've found, to our surprise, is that the more research we do and the more research other laboratories and other research groups do, the stronger our initial claims actually become. And that's quite extraordinary. Generally, what happens is that you make a scientific discovery, and the more you research it, it's more a bit like opening a Pandora's box. And the more that you look at it, the less strong your original claims are. But surprisingly, the more research we do, the more horses that we look at, the stronger it becomes. So what we've found subsequently is that it does actually relate to speed. It's not just distance. We've measured horses in training that using heart rate monitors and GPS systems to actually measure speed in the gallops, and we find that CC horses are indeed faster than their TT counterparts. We found also that it translates into how much people are willing to pay for these horses in the sales ring. So we've looked at breeze-up sales or two-year-old sales in North America, and we've looked at yearling sales in Australia. And consistently, people are spending more money on the CC types. And that's probably because those CC types are developing earlier, as I mentioned about the muscle growth at early stages, and that they are looking the part earlier on, and that translates into how much people are willing to give in the sales ring. We now also know what is the actual mutation that's causing it, and the mechanism by which the gene is having the effect on these traits. That's probably a bit more of a technical finding. We're continuing to investigate and understand the various different influences that the gene is having. But not only myostatin, it's important to point out, as I said, it's not just a single gene that's contributing to the overall performance trait. We've done quite a lot of work to using thousands of samples at this point. We have over 12,000 samples in our database that we can interrogate to understand genes for performance. And we are really at a stage now where we can quite clearly pick out the genetic markers and the genes that are contributing to other traits that might be relevant.
In your world and the people with whom you come in contact, how many trainers and horsemen, percentage-wise, do you think subscribe now to the idea that genetic information can help them, and how many do you think are resisting it still?
Gosh, I'm not sure that I can give you a percentage. What I can say is that my company, Plus Vital, has clients in over 20 different countries in all of the major bloodstock regions of the world, and we have not only trainers but owners, bloodstock agents, using the information to inform decision making. I would imagine that we have really only at this point captured a fraction of the market interest in terms of people who are actively participating and using genetic testing. I don't think that that's a reflection necessarily of a belief in genetics, that there are underlying genes contributing to traits. I think it's potentially maybe that there's a culture in the industry of a way of doing things. And we have to remember, you know, this is a long established industry that is steeped in tradition, and people have been selecting and producing champion racehorses for hundreds of years and doing so extremely successfully. So a new idea, which is quite an abstract concept for many who don't understand genetics, and it's not a simple science by any manner of means, it's a giant leap to take on a new idea like this. But what we would advocate, and we always have, is that it's another part of the puzzle. There are many, many different things that have to come together. Our genetics is not designed to replace the existing knowledge of pedigrees or of horsemanship that exists in the industry. It's designed to sit alongside that and to complement and to assist with decision-making, not to make decisions.
It'll be very interesting to see, as you alluded to earlier, if and when this sort of information will start showing up in books at Arcana and Keeneland and other places where auctions are held. Very, very interesting. Dr. Emmeline Hill, thank you so much for a few minutes on this topic.
Thank you very much.